Picture this. You're halfway through your Tuesday morning commute right here in Westchester County.
Oh, yeah, the classic daily grind.
Right, exactly. You're drinking your coffee, the radio's on, and traffic is just doing that familiar, rhythmic dance of stop and go. It's completely mundane.
Right, you could drive it in your sleep, which a lot of people basically do.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been there. But then, in literally a fraction of a second, the rhythm breaks and everything changes. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one. It's a heavy topic today.
It really is. Today, we're opening up this really fascinating stack of materials. We've got structural engineering analyses, regional traffic data from New York, and some incredibly revealing legal case studies.
Yeah, some of the documents in here are just eye-opening.
Totally. And our mission today is to essentially dissect the hidden architecture of a commuter's worst nightmare. We're looking specifically at a recent highly disruptive crash on Interstate 684.
Right, up near exit 3, Route 22, town of North Castle.
Yes, that exact one, where an SUV violently overturned, basically shutting down the entire morning rush, injured the driver, forced a ramp closure, just total standstill.
And an accident like that, particularly a rollover, it's never just a single moment in time.
No, it's really not.
It's the violent catalyst for this, like, massive physical, financial, and legal chain reaction that most people are just completely unprepared for.
Which is why we need to unpack this. We're going to dive into the exact physics of why these top-heavy vehicles are so vulnerable to rolling, how the honestly archaic design of our local parkways weaponizes those physics.
Weaponizes is a great word for it, honestly.
Right. And then we'll decode the complex algorithms that insurance companies use in the aftermath. Plus, we'll look at the ultimate defense injured drivers have to fight back against these massive companies.
It really is this incredible intersection of mechanical engineering, civil infrastructure, and, well, corporate risk modeling.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the mechanics of that catalyst. In this I-684 incident, an SUV completely overturned. Now, I drive an SUV, and frankly, it feels like a tank.
Sure, they feel incredibly planted when you're just cruising.
Exactly. So why is it that when structural engineers and traffic safety experts hear the word rollover, it triggers such a massive alarm?
Well, it comes down to the friction vectors, right? And importantly, where the vehicle holds its mass.
Okay, friction vectors, break that down for me.
So an SUV feels like a tank because it's heavy. We're talking often upwards of 5,000 pounds of metal.
Right.
But unlike a sedan, where the heavy parts, like the engine block, the transmission, are mounted really low to the asphalt, an SUV has a significantly higher center of gravity.
Because you're sitting up high.
Exactly. The mass is suspended high up in the air.
Okay, so I want to refine an analogy here from the sources. I used to think of an SUV flipping like a tall ship caught in a crosswind, like it just gets blown over.
A lot of people think that, yeah. But it's actually way more dynamic than that.
Right, it's not just wind pushing you over. It's
Yeah.
about what happens when the tires grip the road a little too well during a sideways slide.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. The engineering term for that specific event is a trip.
A trip, like tripping over your own feet.
Precisely. Imagine you're running full speed across a gym floor, right? And you suddenly try to stop by turning your feet sideways.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
If your sneakers grip the floor perfectly, your feet stop instantly. But your torso, your center of mass, keeps moving forward at full speed.
Oh, wow. So you don't slide, you just.
You trip and tumble violently. You pivot right over your own feet.
So the momentum pivots over the friction point.
Exactly. In an SUV, if you swerve suddenly, the vehicle might start to slide sideways. And if the tires suddenly find grip,
Like hitting a dry patch of pavement.
right, a dry patch or the edge of a pothole or even just the soft dirt on the shoulder. That grip acts like the sneakers on the gym floor. The tires start moving laterally, but the high center of gravity just keeps traveling sideways.
The vehicle literally trips over its own wheels.
It does. And once it passes that tipping point, all the electronic safety features in the world cannot rewrite the laws of physics.
I'm so glad you brought up electronic safety features, actually, because my dashboard is full of acronyms like ESC, ABS. Shouldn't electronic stability control, like, prevent me from sliding in the first place?
It definitely tries to. ESC uses these yaw sensors to detect if the car is rotating faster than your steering wheel input suggests it should be.
Okay.
If it detects a slide, It rapidly pulses the brakes on individual wheels, maybe just the front right or the rear left, to try and straighten the vehicle out.
That sounds like an amazing system.
It is. But here's where it fails mechanically. It relies on tire grip to work.
Oh, right.
If you're on slick pavement, or if you overcorrect the steering wheel too violently in a panic, the lateral force simply overpowers the braking force. The system is just totally overwhelmed.
And when it does tip, the documentation we're reviewing paints a pretty grim picture of what happens to the human body inside.
Extremely grim, yeah.
Because we aren't just talking about the forward momentum where an airbag deploys and catches your head.
No, not at all. Because the vehicle is rotating, the occupants are subjected to severe multi-directional centrifugal forces.
So you're just being thrown everywhere.
Yeah, side to side, up and down, against the interior of the cabin. Our sources highlight that this multidirectional trauma is exactly why rollovers disproportionately result in severe traumatic brain injuries.
And spinal cord damage too, right?
Yes, spinal cord damage, complex bone fractures. It's devastating.
Well, let's talk about the roof for a second, because I always assumed a car's roof was basically a roll cage. But the engineering data we have suggests otherwise.
Yeah, that's a huge misconception. The pillars holding up your roof, the A, B, and C pillars, are tested for what's called roof crush resistance.
Okay.
And they are legally required to support a multiple of the vehicle's own weight.
Which sounds good on paper.
It does, but those tests usually apply force straight down. In a dynamic rollover, the vehicle is hitting the ground at bizarre, unpredictable angles.
So it's hitting on the corners, on the sides.
Exactly, which introduces massive shear forces that the pillars just aren't optimized to handle. If the roof buckles inward, the survival space for the occupants is instantly compromised.
God, that is terrifying. Which brings us to a massive question. We know how the physics work now, but the engineering doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Right.
These vehicles are operating in a specific physical environment. And looking at the data for our region like Westchester County, down into the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, the local infrastructure seems perfectly calibrated to trigger these exact physics.
Oh, it really is. It's this phenomenal collision of two completely different eras of engineering.
I kind of want to push back on that, though. I mean, people drive the Hutchinson River Parkway or the Bronx River Parkway every single day.
Sure they do. Millions of people.
Right. We know these roads. We know they're tight and windy. If a driver's paying attention, should they be able to navigate them safely, regardless of what they're driving?
Well, what's fascinating here is that familiarity gives you a map in your head, but it doesn't change the physical geometry of the road.
Okay, fair.
Let's look at the civil engineering history of the region. Many of these parkways were designed in the 1920s and 30s.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah. The Bronx River Parkway was literally designed as a scenic, leisurely drive for Model Ts and early low-slung sedans.
Oh, wow.
And they were traveling maybe 35 miles an hour.
So we are putting 5,000-pound top-heavy SUVs doing 65 miles an hour onto what is essentially a scenic carriage path.
Yes, exactly. And the critical failure point is something civil engineers call super elevation, or in plain English, banking.
Like how a NASCAR track is tilted.
Exactly like that. Modern highways tilt inward on a curve. The road banking actively pushes the weight of the vehicle down into the asphalt, which helps it turn safely.
Right, that makes sense.
But many of these old local parkways lack modern banking. Some even have a high crown in the center for water runoff.
Wait, meaning the road is higher in the middle?
Yeah, which means on certain curves, the road actually tilts away from the turn.
Oh, that is a nightmare.
Oh.
So the road surface is actively pulling a top-heavy SUV outward, basically fighting the suspension.
You nailed it. Now, add to that the lack of acceleration lanes.
Oh, don't get me started on the on-ramps around here.
Right. You have on-ramps in Westchester where merging traffic literally has a stop sign.
Yes. And you just have to pray and gun it.
You have to instantly accelerate into a lane of traffic moving at highway speeds, which forces the mainline traffic to brake abruptly.
And let's connect the dots here based on what we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
If I'm driving an SUV on the hutch and someone merges wildly from a stop sign, I have to slam on the brakes and swerve.
Right.
And braking shifts all the weight of my vehicle to the front tires, unloading the rear tires, which makes them lose grip, and then I turn the wheel.
And you just created the absolute perfect recipe for oversteer, a sideways slide, and that subsequent trip we discussed. The infrastructure demands rapid, evasive maneuvers, and an SUV is mechanically the least equipped to execute those maneuvers without tipping.
Okay, so the dust settles. Mm-hmm. Paramedics arrive. We understand the physics. We understand the scary road geometry. Now we enter the aftermath.
The really complicated part.
Yeah. And the sources point out that this is where a completely different kind of machinery takes over, the determination of liability.
Right.
Now, my initial thought is, if my car flips over, the police and the insurance company are just going to look at me and say, well, you lost control.
Yeah.
Your fault.
And that is absolutely the default assumption. And frankly, it is a highly profitable assumption for insurance carriers.
I bet it is.
But when you actually apply forensic accident reconstruction to the mechanics we just talked about, liability fractures into a deeply complex web.
Because it wasn't necessarily just driver error.
Exactly. Think about that evasive maneuver you just described on the hutch. If another driver recklessly forced you out of your lane and then drove off without a scratch.
Right, they're gone.
That's what's known as a phantom vehicle scenario. Their negligence initiated the physical chain reaction, or consider roadway maintenance. If a pothole alters the friction coefficient of the asphalt mid-slide, that becomes a municipal liability issue.
That makes sense. What about the car itself?
Product liability is huge here. What if your vehicle's electronic stability control yaw sensor failed? Or what if the roof crush resistance was demonstrably inadequate for the rollover?
But proving all of that sounds incredibly difficult. Like, if I'm sitting in a hospital bed with a cervical spine injury, I literally do not have the bandwidth to download the black box data from my wrecked SUV to prove a yaw sensor fail.
You don't. You absolutely don't. And that vulnerability is exactly what the insurance industry's business model is built around.
Let's dig into that business model, actually, because this is where the materials we reviewed get very, very analytical.
It's pretty dark when you look closely at it.
Yeah. We tend to think of an insurance adjuster as a person evaluating our specific pain and suffering. But the data shows this is largely an algorithmic risk containment strategy.
That's exactly what it is.
How do they actually calculate a payout?
They use these massive, complex algorithmic software systems. When a claim comes in, the software looks at the zip code, the injury diagnostic codes, the vehicle damage.
Just raw data points.
Just data. And it generates a baseline settlement value. The goal of the adjuster is to get the victim to accept a number as close to that low baseline as possible and as quickly as possible.
Right, because early on, the victim doesn't actually know the long-term cost of their injuries.
Exactly.
If the insurance company offers a fast check for, say, $15,000, a family staring at missed rent and immediate ER bills might just take it to survive.
And by taking it, they sign a release of liability, they're done. But a traumatic brain injury might require years of cognitive therapy. Ugh. A spinal injury might require a lifetime of modified housing and lost earning potential. $15,000 is a rounding error compared to the lifetime cost of catastrophic trauma.
Wow.
The algorithm knows this. Its entire purpose is to close the file before the victim realizes the true scope of their financial exposure.
So how do you break the algorithm? I mean, if the software is designed to minimize risk to the insurance company's bottom line, what variable actually forces the software to recalculate and pay out what a claim is really worth?
Honestly, the single most disruptive variable in an insurance algorithm is the litigation history of the plaintiff's legal counsel.
Wait, really? The software actually factors in who your lawyer is?
Absolutely it does.
Yeah.
If a victim hires a lawyer who settles 99% of their cases out of court just to turn a quick profit, the insurance algorithm knows that.
Oh, that's wild.
It knows that lawyer will eventually blink. So it keeps the settlement offer incredibly low.
Which brings us to the case studies in our deep dive today. The sources highlight a specific, powerful countermeasure for victims in our region, pointing directly to the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Yes.
And looking at the data, the strategy here perfectly illustrates how to break that algorithm.
Norman Gershon operates as what the industry calls a trial lawyer.
I love that phrase.
It's true, though. The sources note he is the attorney. Other lawyers actually call to try their toughest cases. And mathematically, that changes everything for the insurance company.
Why, though? Like, I understand having trial experience is good, but why does the computer algorithm care?
Because of the massive mechanics of trial preparation. To take a catastrophic rollover case to a jury, an attorney cannot just rely on a standard police report.
Right, they need more.
They have to hire accident reconstructionists to map those friction vectors we talked about. They have to subpoena the vehicle's event data recorder, the black box.
Oh, so they do all that heavy lifting you mentioned earlier?
Exactly. They hire biomechanical engineers to prove exactly how the roof crush compromised the spine. This requires an immense amount of capital and specialized legal aggression.
And when the insurance company sees that level of preparation happening, they realize they can't bluff anymore.
Exactly. The risk profile shifts dramatically. The insurance company is suddenly facing the immense cost of their own legal defense, plus the unpredictable nature of a jury that might see a heavily prepared case and award massive, massive damages.
So their leverage completely evaporates.
It vanishes.
I'm looking at the outcomes in these files, and the numbers validate exactly what you're saying. These aren't just arbitrary figures. They're proof of the algorithm failing. No. And a jury recognizing the actual lifetime cost of these injuries.
These numbers are staggering.
Seriously, we are looking at a $16.5 million verdict in a vehicle versus bus collision, a $14.5 million settlement involving catastrophic injuries, multiple motor vehicle accident verdicts over $5 million, and a $2.5 million verdict specifically for a crash in Westchester County.
Those numbers represent forensic preparation forcing accountability. They represent lifetime medical care actually being secured, lost wages being fully replaced.
That's huge.
And families being protected from the financial ruin that follows a crash they didn't even cause.
But, you know, what I found equally compelling in the materials wasn't just the millions of dollars. It was the actual client testimonials.
Oh, yeah. Those were really striking.
Because litigation is a brutal process. One client noted, quote, "He was thorough, prepared, and confident in court. I couldn't have asked for better."
That's high praise.
It really highlights a dual approach, you know, being highly aggressive and feared by corporate defense teams, but maintaining this clear communicative dedication to the actual person suffering.
It creates a protective shield for the client. The victim can focus entirely on their physical rehabilitation while the legal team absorbs all the immense stress of fighting the corporate bureaucracy.
Right.
And crucially, this level of elite representation is built on a contingency model.
Right. The sources specify that the law offices of Norman Gershon operate on an only pay if you win policy.
Which is vital.
Totally vital. Because an injured commuter doesn't have the hundreds of thousands of dollars needed to hire accident reconstructionists up front.
No one does.
It democratizes access to elite legal leverage. If you are navigating the aftermath of a crash in Westchester, NYC, and you need to deploy this kind of countermeasure, their direct line is 914-485-1444.
That's a crucial number to have.
Again, that is 914-485-1444.
It's all about taking that power dynamic that heavily favors the insurance company and completely inverting it.
So, synthesizing everything we've unpacked today, we started with the momentary disruption on I-684.
Right.
We stripped away the illusion of safety to see the raw physics of center of gravity and lateral friction that make SUVs so uniquely susceptible to rollovers.
The old sneakers on the gym floor.
Exactly. We examined how the antiquated geometry of our local parkways, like the lack of banking and the dangerous merge points, actively works against modern vehicle dynamics.
It's a dangerous mix.
We expose the cold, algorithmic reality of how insurance companies calculate human trauma. And finally, we look at the precise mechanism of leverage, how deeply prepared trial counsel, like Norman Gershon, can force those systems to recognize the true cost of an injury.
It really completely reframes how we should think about our daily commute.
It really does. As you head out on the road tomorrow, remember that if the worst does happen, you don't have to accept the baseline algorithm. You can reach out to the law offices of Norman Gershon at 914-485-1444 to level playing field.
And, you know, it leaves us with a pretty profound underlying thought.
What's that?
When we get behind the wheel, we make this silent agreement. We implicitly trust the physics of our vehicles, the engineering of the roads, and the strangers driving alongside us.
Yeah, we have to.
But when that trust is violently broken in a fraction of a second, the real measure of justice isn't just about repairing bent metal. It's about asking how our society truly values a person's future and whether the legal machinery we rely on is genuinely designed to make them whole again.